This is The Biz of Wealth. Challenges, rumblings, and evolution of the wealth management industry.
Welcome to Business of Wealth. Today, I sat down with Jeff Mount. He's a veteran of financial services as an advisor. He's been with many well-recognized companies such as Sean Hancock, Goodman Allstate, MetLife, and Curian Capital. He launched this very interesting app called Dynamic Mapping. And we spoke about his view on how financial planning should be disrupted. He has a very peculiar view that most of financial advisors are not sharing right now. So we discussed all this with him and much more. Please enjoy Jeff Mount. Hi, Jeffrey. Welcome to the Business of Wealth. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to talk about what you've been doing because I find it interesting. On your profile, you talk about how you focus on the needs of clients and not on the needs of institutions when designing your app. What do you mean by that?
So the traditional method of financial planning generally kicks out 50 to 300 pages. I love to clown around with advisors who've gone through the experiences. How many of your prospects or clients have pulled their head out of these things with tears coming out of their eyes out of pure boredom? Because it's just a bunch of spreadsheets and pie charts and bar graphs, and everything's delivered in silos. So it doesn't really encourage strategic thinking. It encourages confusion. And they all start to chuckle and they say, just about every single one of them does that. Listen, the method that is used in those things really was built for originally institutions, foundations, endowments, and pensions. And that does make sense. You know, if you're dealing with a committee of people, a risk profile questionnaire is probably going to get a pretty good average of the temperature in the room. But the risk profile questionnaire, which of course is the starting point for every financial plan and every investment selection in terms of portfolio construction, really is for a husband and wife getting their temperature for the last 5 minutes. Somebody who fills out that questionnaire 12 months ago versus today, same questions, same people, probably very different answers.
So what do you do differently?
So rather than taking into account people's opinions about which direction the market's going to go, we recommend building out purpose-based portfolios, which means you're going to have more than just a qualified and a non-qualified account. You're going to have an account for retirement, probably one qualified, one non-qualified. You're going to have an account for each of your children for their college savings. We like to encourage people to start saving for their kids' weddings at very early ages because it is potentially the biggest and best party you're going to throw in your lifetime. And if you start early, it's not that difficult to do. And then, of course, age the portfolio is kind of like target date portfolio management, but it's a little different. The challenge with target date portfolio management is it does still assign a certain degree of risk management to the sub-asset classes. So international and domestic, large cap and small. Bottom line is you want diversification and you want risk management to work for you when things get really bad. And when things get really bad, all those things correlate to one. And we believe instead, we'll leave it to the advisor as to what they're actually going to use in those risk assets. But we do think through aging of the portfolios, you can move from risk to income producing asset classes to highly liquid asset classes as you get closer and closer to the distribution date on each of those unique purpose-based portfolios. And that is what makes us different than target date.
How did you arrive to this? Why? How did you make? I imagine you used to be a traditional financial advisor. And how did you? What was your thought process? How did you actually build it?
Let me clarify that I spent 25 years on the wholesale side. Nice. So right? So my business partner, Mike Helgeson, was one of the very first CFPs, showing his age. He's an older gentleman. But he built this method of dynamic mapping early on in his career. And he and I became really good friends when he went through my training program, the Essential Family Office. And he was able to build a really solid book of middle-class millionaires. We define that as households with $750,000 in assets or more and control over their budget. We know plenty of people make a lot of money but spend more. Not those people. We're looking for the people who truly have control over their finances. As he applied this method of risk management to these portfolios, what he noticed was whenever we hit a dot-com collapse or a credit crisis of 2008, or even going back further into the early 90s when we had tough markets there because of the SNL scandal, you had all the risk taken in those accounts that will not be needed to be distributed for a very long time. Those accounts that did need to be distributed soon were already in a safe place. So these investors really felt comfortable and allowed him the flexibility to be pretty aggressive on the risky part of the portfolio, knowing full well that they're not going to need that money for a very, very long time. We all know that the standard deviation story, right? Over 10 and 15 year periods of time, our average rates of returns are fairly predictable. In a 2 or 3 or 4 year period of time, they're not. They're wild. And that's why we believe so strongly in this aging process. And when we do put advisors through the training program, again, we leave them the ability to deliver their own alpha as to which types of risk they're going to take and which types of income-producing asset classes they're going to use. But we're firm about, hey, this is how you manage the risk overall. And we know this will keep people comfortable.
So no matter what the client says, you're working on your...
Right. Their opinion about the market really won't matter to us. And we let them know up front, your opinions are going to change all the time and they're going to be dramatic. You're going to get fearful. You're going to get greedy. We're only focused on your distribution date in terms of managing the risk. If you have some ideas as to where we should take risk or generate income, we'll absolutely engage in that conversation. But we are not going to change your allocations based on how you feel today because the wind's blowing out of the south.
Right. So in practice, you start off with, you know, if we are in, you know, somebody's in their 30s, you start off with high risk allocations of, I don't know, the stock market, and then we'll go into bonds when they are closer to the 60s for a retirement plan.
Correct. The income producing asset classes could be bonds, could be REITs, could be anything, could be dividend paying stocks, mix of all those. Obviously, as you get very close to distribution date, you want to be thinking about short-term treasuries, cash, you know, really safe liquid places. And then, of course, once you go into distribution mode, it's a different method. It's more of a bucketing strategy, but it's the same idea in the sense that you always want to have at least 18 months of worth of income in that short-term U.S. Treasury type bucket. Why do we pick 18 months? Because that's the average length of a bear market. Right. Oh, you don't want to be selling off stocks.
My next question. When is it that you stop being aggressive and say, okay, it's time to really make sure that you're going to get the distribution you need because we're closer to the date of, you know, cash out.
It's going. Right. So it's just a gradual step down, if you will, from risk. So you're going to, let's say 10 years away, you could be almost 100%, probably 80-20. Stocks to bonds or risk to income. And each year we're gradually moving that allocation away from risk more towards income. And then when you get inside of 4 years, we start increasing the allocation towards the highly liquid asset classes as a means of, and again, we let the advisor choose what kinds of securities they're going to use inside of those three silos. But we do strongly and firmly believe that this is a best way to eliminate the effects of fear and greed.
Like from the marketing and sales standpoint, from that point of view, I really like the idea because it's a very easy entry point in the conversation with the client. You can say, hey, I'm only doing an account for your kids' college, and we're mm-hmm. going to accomplish this with this account. And then I'm only going to do an account for retirement. And then, so it's a holy grail for marketing, because that's the way you, you know, you actually promote your business. You know, you provide an easy entry point, an easy conversation starter, and then you go through engaging with the client and making the relationship larger. Is that part of your thought process?
Yeah. So the you're referring to not only the family obligations, as we like to call them, but also the way it's displayed. So rather than doing the boring spreadsheets that make people cry out of boredom, we are doing a graph that is effectively measuring the math, present value, future value calculations of each of these family purposes. And we're calculating your liability, I'll come back to what that means in a second, versus your assets. And when you do so, both through accumulation and distribution phase, it naturally creates the image of a sailboat. And that's where our metaphor sailing through life begins. I mentioned a second ago liabilities. This is a really important topic. So when you think about institutional investors, they often are comparing their return in a given period of time, let's say 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, versus a benchmark, maybe the S&P 500 or a blended benchmark. We don't see any real value in that, because not everybody needs to take that kind of risk at all times. We believe that if we can assign your year by year future value need for each of life's purposes, that becomes your benchmark. And it certainly allows you to be aggressive when you want to be, because you're far away from needing it. And of course, more conservative, because you're approaching the distribution phase. By doing this, that creates the hull of your boat. Your sails, if they're big and billowing, show that you're doing well in terms of accumulating assets towards that particular purpose. And what's also nice is you can throw in things like your mortgage in the app, and it starts to show strategic conflicts. When you think about one of the biggest strategic conflicts that most people do not see when they get a traditional financial plan is the fact that over the last 20 years, we've seen interest rates drop pretty steadily. And a lot of these people were refinancing their mortgage again and again and again. Very few of them stopped to think about what this new 30-year term was going to do in terms of the timing of it. In a lot of cases, it went 5 and 10 years into retirement. Why? Because we wanted that lower monthly payment. Well, that's a challenge on several fronts. So if my mortgage continues 5 or 10 years into retirement, I'm now interrupting my goal, the what they call the go-go years. You're still young enough to go out and enjoy all those vacations you couldn't take while you were working, because you didn't have the time, you didn't have the money. Now you have time, you have the money, except you've got the burden of this mortgage, which means not only are you spending more on a monthly basis, but you have to have more for retirement because you have that obligation. If you can, and of course, this is a nice thing about the Dynamic Map app, is you can go in there using the carousel, get to mortgage, and you can find out exactly how much more you need to pay each month to pay down the mortgage on time for retirement. And then, of course, that would eliminate that chunk of money you needed for retirement to actually pay down the mortgage, which reduces that need. And of course, it shows you better, much, much better outcome. It's also important to note, because we're trying to gamify this and keep people playing, I would like people to download this and play with, okay, well, what if this, what if that, and do this all day, every day, because it is, number one, it's kind of fun. And number two, you're going to see the top of the page where you get to your graph, your boat, you're going to see an outcome. There's four possible outcomes. The best outcomes we call a fantastic journey, where you're reaching port, your sails are big and billowing, there's fireworks in the background, kids are waiting for you, and it couldn't be better than that. The next one down is we call well done, which means, okay, the water's a little rougher, but your sails are up, you're going to get there, it just might not be the easiest ride. And of course, the next one down, the slack sails, it's really rough water, and God forbid you're in the last one, which is where you have thunder and lightning and you're boat, it has no sails and you're stuck between two boulders and things are just not good. But again, the what ifs allow you to play with these things. And of course, we've incorporated that into the training videos, with what we call tailwinds and boulders. So tailwinds are good. Those are things like an inheritance, vested stock options, sale of a family business. Boulders are bad. That's divorce, a layoff, illness or disability. And we show you how to manage those using this tool. And we think it's a great way to keep people engaged and not bored with financial planning.
So this seems like a very a fintech.
Yes.
Focused on the end user. What does the financial advisor role play? What is the role here?
So the advisor, it's funny. I just had this conversation with a gentleman this morning who does focus on work-life balance with advisors. And he says, oh, this sounds like it's a sales tool for advisors. And I would say, no, it's a productivity tool for advisors. Because the average length of time, start to finish, on a traditional financial advisor, between the discovery conversation, between the data gathering, the phone calls, the emails for the missed data as they went through all of that, putting it all together, understanding what's there, and then, of course, reviewing it with the client, the average length of time there is 13 hours. With this tool, you can visualize your financial future in 10 minutes or less. And because it's not a spreadsheet or a bar graph or a pie chart, you will understand where you are. Now, you might need help with strategic planning. That's where the advisor comes in. But nobody's going to be confused or lost or bored coming out of this exercise. And at any given time, you just go in there and say, what if? What if this? What if that? Now you have very intelligent conversations happening between the advisor and the client, which builds trust quickly. What's the single biggest challenge an advisor has today? Unfortunately, all the polls tell us gaining the trust of prospective investors.
Right. Yeah, that's it. But also the statistics say that once you earn that client, you don't lose it.
I think it's true. I do. But again, the pool of opportunity here is enormous. 85% of Americans do not work with an advisor. Does that mean they don't have any money? No. We know that's not true because the average account size of Vanguard is over $1 million. So if we can help people to begin having a trusting strategic conversation fast, and of course, continue that conversation into the future without any kind of confusion, I think we've done our job.
So actually talking about this, going into the industry as a whole, what do you think it's working and what do you think it's not working right now in the industry?
Let me give you the history of this. We, 2 years ago, started building this thing, and the first version of the app was meant to be a tool for advisors. Mm-hmm. And I was going to use the Essential Family Office training program as a means of helping them to build that middle-class millionaire book of business, just like Mike Helgus and my business partner did. And then COVID happened. I couldn't travel the country. And the training's just too long to do on Zoom. People get, you get kind of, your eyelids get heavy on Zoom after a while. So I decided we were not going to do that. We made a major pivot in January of this year. We literally rebuilt the app to make it much more intuitive for the average user. And we can work with advisors in this thing, but I will tell you our primary focus is corporate America, helping them with their financial wellness initiatives. That is a topic that has been discussed ad nauseum for decades, and really very little has been done about it. Mm. And as I'm talking to HR people and various companies, I hear so we're just going to continue to rely on the free calculator we got from the 401k provider.
Oh, yeah, I hate that.
Or, we have a guy who comes here once a year from the 401k, and he kind of tells us about the tax deductibility of our contributions. And I'm like, look, you and I both know neither of those circumstances are helping anybody with financial wellness. And here's the downside of this. This is well documented that on average, each employee loses $1,000 in productivity per year due to their disengagement of what they're doing because they're worried about their personal finances. Over 2/3 of the country doesn't have a $500 emergency account. emergency savings account. These are real problems that are not just hurting the employees, but they're hurting the employer.
Yeah.
We can build the awareness and the financial literacy. As I like to say, we like to bridge the gap between financial literacy and financial freedom by helping people to stay engaged mentally in finding and funding their family obligations.
Right. But there is also like a huge psychological issue with money. So do you think the financial advisor can, you know, supply that support, like provide that support for that? I've seen a lot of people talking about how the financial advisor is becoming more of a coach than a product offering platform. And
I think the advisor, it should be in the coaching position. I think that's ideally where they could be. If you can get past the trust issues that struggle in the beginning and get to that point, then they can. Now, I will take it a step further, because I do think the advisor community will shrink in the next big bear market. I don't think, I'm talking about not like what we saw last year, but a real full 18-month cycle of bear market. Think about the demographics. We have the average age is 60 years old. There are very few young people coming in the business. I think once the pain is felt, they're going to see a bunch of the older folks just kind of drop off and say, okay, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. These bear markets are just really tough and frustrating. Well, that means you're going to have a smaller pool of advisors and they're going to be fighting for. And so we believe that essential family office, and for people who don't know what a family office is, it's typically a service model reserved for very, very wealthy families. Think $50 million or more. Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, they certainly have a family office service for that group. And it used to be reserved for $500 million or more. Bottom line is, this essential family office experience training that we created can coach the advisor to become a coach and effectively lead an essential family office service model where they're engaging on a regular basis with the accountant, the attorney, the property and casualty risk management expert.
Yeah, it's a management. But why do you think we don't have young advisors?
That's a great question. If I had the answer to that, I'd be very, very wealthy. I don't really know. I know that the wirehouses and a lot of the insurance agencies are using kind of a team approach to pull them in, which I think is probably the best thing they can do, but it still doesn't answer your question. And I'm not exactly sure what that answer is.
And what do you think firms, like financial advisory firms, should be doing right now?
I think they should start stepping up their game right now as it relates to the client service model. We are in a zero commission world, so the commission, I think that the real opportunity to make your money on commissions is nearing an end. If not in many cases, it's ended. As it relates to fees, I know some are charging flat fees in terms of dollars. Some are still doing percentage of assets. And I think that's pretty much the wave of the future. It's going to be either one of those two models. I don't think the percentage of assets will go away, but I do think you're going to see more and more people just charging flat, $2,500, $5,000, whatever it may be. And I think there's great opportunity with a shrinking advisor base, but you can't be stuck in the old way of doing things.
Right. So I see that you moved from, a B2B model to a B2C model.
Correct.
What are the challenges you're facing?
Well, I think there's, this is a space, this financial wellness initiative is something that has not been taken very seriously by a lot of corporations for a number of years. Sometimes when I talk to HR reps, I'll hear, well, we have a guy who does financial plans. Well, you and I both know if they're doing a traditional financial plan, they're not doing it for every employee. They're doing it for leadership because it's lucrative. Those are people with a lot of income and a lot of assets, and that makes sense. But what about everybody else? We are trying to fulfill that obligation with everybody else. And we believe the gamification is a great way to get there. I do think the challenge with the general public is to get people talking about their finances. We've all been told this is a topic we just don't discuss publicly.
Private.
Although I do find different parts of the country are different about that. I noticed the East Coast is definitely like, oh, no, don't talk about your finances. I talk to people in California, they're pretty open about it. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah, I didn't know that. How open are they?
They're pretty open. I mean, you talk to a lot of people.
Nobody's going to tell you how much they make.
Right. You go to California, they're all, yeah, I make $500,000 a year and I got X number of dollars invested in this and that. And it's not a one-off. That's a kind of a common thing I'm seeing out there.
Right. I'd like to ask this, you know, tell me something that's true that almost nobody agrees with you on.
So I use this as a metaphor often. In fact, I used it in a social media post this morning. The square root of 12 is blue.
What?
Yeah. So what I'm trying to do is get people out of linear thinking, because of course you hear the square root of 12, you're trying to immediately solve the math problem.
Right.
I'm trying to get people to think three-dimensionally. And that is, all right, we have something we're trying to accomplish. Here's the old way. It didn't work as well as we'd like. What can we do differently to get our point across? That's really what that metaphor is all about. And the fact that it's so weird of an answer to the question, it seems to grab people and pull them into the conversation.
I like that. So what do you envision for the future of asset management in general?
You know, I think...
How long is it going to take, actually?
Well, I don't know. So the future has to, certain things have to change. Risk profile questionnaires have got to improve. I recognize the SEC mandates that there is one, and I think there are a lot of compliance officers who use it as a CYA document as opposed to really, truly a risk management tool.
I've gone through that with my fintech clients. I'm like,
right?
No, streamline it. I know you can do better. Make it shorter. Make it wider. Like, for sure. And, you know, you see the betterments and the wealth fronts of the world that they did. They did make it. And I'm sure they're compliant because they're a huge organization.
Of course.
Small organizations are scared.
Yeah, there's no question. There has to be an improvement there. Which means compliance and legal they have to step up and start negotiating with the people in charge to come to that agreement. I think that's number one. Systematic rebalancing is an institutional method of risk management that has got to be tossed for families. Here's what I mean by that. If the risk profile questionnaire was wrong, the answers to it were wrong in terms of accurately portraying the risk tolerance of, let's say, a husband and wife, and you're using systematic rebalancing to buy low and sell high, aren't you repeating the mistake on a systematic basis?
Yes.
Right. So this is where the aging of portfolios makes a lot more sense. It's emotionless. If they answer the risk profile questionnaire incorrectly, and I did speak with a guy last week who's working, he's a psychologist and he's gone deep in this and he's doing what he can to improve these things and better identify what their real risk tolerance actually is. And I think it's an imperfect science, but yes, we have to fix that. And the systematic rebalancing, that's got to go for people. Foundations, endowments, sure, it's fine.
Okay. Last question. If you could have a billboard with anything on it, why would it be and why?
The safest route between points A and B is rarely the fastest route. Let me share with you a story. Mike Helgeson's father was on submarines during World War II. Excuse me, not on submarines. He was on. He was a shipping between Norway and the United States, and they would deliver food. You know, we got to eat. So they would be in this boat. And during World War II, of course, we all know about the U-boats, the German submarines that were torpedoing anything that crossed the Atlantic. If he'd gone A to B, it would have been a straight line across the Atlantic. They absolutely would have been torpedoed and it would have been killed instantly. So in order to safely cross the Atlantic, because their boat would move 8 knots, I mean, really, really slow. Mm-hmm. And typically these things would move in convoys surrounded by destroyers to keep submarines away. But if you can't keep up, you're left behind. And that was, this boat was always left behind because it was the slowest of all the boats, just carrying fruit and vegetables and stuff. So what they would have to do is they would travel along the ice up north, the North Atlantic, around Greenland and Iceland, all the way over to Canada, down into Maine, and of course into the United States. And the way they did that is they would have full steam ahead during the day, turn all the engines off, because they didn't want the lights on to alert anybody, and they would literally just coast at night. And they did this back and forth multiple times, and they were successful. The reason they were successful was the submarines, of course, couldn't get near the boats because you have the biggest part of the icebergs below the surface, right? So they had to stay back. And it's a good analogy. And again, it comes back to the aging of portfolios. And that's where this all comes from, is if I'm on a sailboat, which is our metaphor, do I want to be going just as fast once I'm near land as I was out in open water? No, I want to slow down so I don't crash. See the metaphor again? We don't want to crash at just the wrong time when we hit land. So yeah, I would suggest that the safest route is not always the fastest route.
I like it. Thank you. Okay. That's great, Jeff. Thank you so much for this. It was a lot of fun and very enlightening. So I'll see you soon.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much again.